Welcome, everybody. This is the next episode of BVS Film Productions Final Cuts. And today I have master audio and video editor, Eddie Tomeko.
Hey, what's happening?
Yeah, so what
Didn't
is happening?
Did I just
happening?
See you yesterday?
Yeah, actually, yeah, today. No, today. We talked today.
Yeah, I saw you today. We talked.
So, yeah. Eddie works here at BVS Film Productions, and he also has his own recording studio, which we are in right now. This is this is the BVS Satellite podcast recording studio extravaganza, would you say? Pretty amazing.
Right. It's working out pretty good here.
Yeah.
We've done some nice projects here, and, you know, it's been cool. It's a nice, tight-sounding room, you know.
Yeah.
It's perfect for this kind of work. Perfect for audio recording of any kind, which I've done pretty much every type of thing you could possibly do.
Tell us about that for a minute, because this is kind of new for us here in this location. So what was this before it became this?
Oh, as far as I know, I used to live down the street from here. That's how I found this place. And I was looking for a new building for my studio, and this wasn't the first spot I saw when I was... When I was looking, I looked at a larger one room. No separate rooms, nothing. I was going to try that because there's a woman, Sylvia Massey. She went from having compartment studios with drum booths and all these things into this one room. She's a producer, engineer. So she's like, I want to be with the artists. I want to be one with the artists when we're producing these records.
That's cool.
So what do they do? You know, when you don't have two rooms, everything's loud, and you're like, how do you hear what you're recording? Mm-hmm. Well, you put headphones on, which, you know, what a concept, you know.
Yeah,
so she's sitting back at the console, and she's listening to what the band's playing in the room 25, 30 feet away from her, wearing headphones just like they are. Wow. And everybody's just one with the sound, you know, in the thing. Mm-hmm. So... that was my idea, to maybe have a studio like that for the first time after having six other different rooms, a couple in houses, you know, which was pretty cool. You know, got great sounds out of that. Worked with some pretty big people in my house studio.
Tell me a little bit.
Bone Thugs and Harmony, to name one.
Yeah,
Grammy winning, MTV award winning.
Wow, that's so cool.
Rap group from Cleveland, you know, very talented guys.
A
couple in there that were really exceptional and, you know, that I really like working with.
Nice.
And, they worked out of my studio, which was built in my basement.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't look like a basement. You don't see the washer and dryer.
Right,
you see a studio like this.
Like this studio.
But just
built
inside somebody's house.
Yeah.
You know, this was in Cleveland at the time. Mm-hmm. So, fast forward to 7 years ago when I built this place, and I'm driving away going, I'm not sure if that room is going to be big enough for what I want to do. I may have to put a wall up. I don't know. You know, it's on the floor with other offices, so that's going to limit my recording time to only evenings after office hours. And I'm like, no, I want 24-hour access if necessary, you know. When the time comes, when I need it. Like, we're shooting this during the day right now, you know?
Right.
So, you know, that's that. But, so I'm pulling away, and I drive past this building, and on the other side of the building, it said, for lease. Mm. And I'm like, oh. I pull back, looking in the window. I see what I could see through the window. I saw separate rooms, doors going into other rooms, and I'm like, I got to look at this.
Yeah,
so I called the owner, the landlord, and I says, hey, when can I come and check this out? He goes, stick around. I'll be there in 15 minutes, 10 minutes. He's probably here in 5. Great guy. But anyway, shout out to Dean. Dean's the man. Anyway, so I did some modifications, put a window, observation window in so I could see the band when I'm recording in the control room. And
well, I got to tell you, some of the stuff you do is... unbelievable. I do not know how you get the drum sounds you get in this studio.
Sweet.
I'm serious. I've listened to these and I'm like, holy crap. It's like, that sounds like anything on the radio. I mean, you know, it's right there. Perfect.
Well, that's my passion, you know, since 1984, technically 84, I actually started making money recording music.
Yeah.
Just graduated from high school, moved to California.
Yeah.
Worked out of a recording studio as a security guard.
Yeah.
guess what the Fringe benefits was? Recording my singer and I in the studio on tape.
I thought you were going to say chicks, but that's...
Chicks.
That's no, bands. But, that's bands, right?
Yeah, okay. Bands. So, yeah, that
Wait
was
minute,
the Fringe.
I didn't mean to say chicks. Sorry.
Girls?
Women. Is
that,
girls.
Is that okay?
Yes. Right.
Well, I mean, we can go off on tangents
anywhere
you want.
Good.
But technically, you know, I started making money recording music, and I loved it. I got bit by the bug, like they say.
Nice.
And it's like, hey, how do you get it to sound like your favorite song?
Right.
That's
right.
A long journey when you don't have Tri-C's recording arts program, YouTube showing you how to do anything you want anymore in any field, you know, so it was all basically just figure it out on your own, kid, you know, and I did that, and I spent probably close to $400,000 on equipment throughout my career, you know, 84, technically, I had a commercial studio in 1988, so that's kind of when I started it, and it was out of my house, but it was commercial. I was doing commercials, I was doing band recordings, demos, this, that, and the other thing, singers, songwriters, that kind of thing. So I was doing a lot of work, and it just evolved into this, and I'm still doing it to this day.
Good.
And I've never advertised for
it. Really? That's cool.
Which is really cool.
So let's talk about some of the gear that you have here. I mean, I'm listening to the things that come out of here, and it's like, wow. I mean, this is like...
Well, just like the old adage is you start with a good sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could put a bad microphone in front of a great, talented guy singing and playing a good sounding guitar, okay, and you're gonna get a good recording. You want to know why? Because half of it's what you're hearing, not the quality of what you're hearing, you know,
interesting.
That's been my mantra, you know, record something that sounds good. Now I've recorded bands that they're rough, you know, but part of my business is that doesn't matter, you know, they're referred from a friend, referred from a client, something like that. Give them the best recording you can get. So and again, I love, like you brought up, the drum sound. I love getting a great drum sound.
Know,
I have a studio kit here that many people use, usually all mic'd up. I'm sitting like right where the drum set's usually set up right now, but people bring in their own drums, give them their great drum sound too, you know. As long as they tune it properly, you know, and it's, they play it well and they hit it with good dynamics, you know.
That's cool.
Nothing too crazy, you know. You want a good hit.
So what about, you know, AI, and you hear stuff about what it can do, and like, you know, triggers and things like, you know, what are your thoughts on all that stuff?
Horrible.
Yeah.
I think it's horrible. Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's the music industry looking for a quick way to get a good sound, ship it off, and make money.
Yeah.
That's really what I think the drum trigger thing originated in as. At first, it was cool. Like when MIDI first came out, I'm like, wow, this is cool. Now, I embrace MIDI.
Yeah.
I'm not a keyboard player, but I could play parts on somebody's record.
Yeah.
And if I make a mistake, I don't have to replay it. I can fix it in the MIDI file.
Do me a favor, tell the people here what MIDI is and what triggers are, because some people might not know.
All right, so MIDI recording is, it's a lot like audio recording, but the flexibility after it's recorded is amazing. It's amazing. You can change the velocity of each and every note that you've played.
Is it because it's digitized? Is that
it's digitized information that represents your performance.
Oh, okay,
so,
got it.
Like in audio, you get a waveform that shows how your audio looks after it's recorded, and it represents the dynamics of it and the sustain and the decay and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But with MIDI, it's just little dots on your screen showing you each note that you played. Now, if you play a chord, there's 3 to 5 possible notes in there. Mm-hmm. If you're playing left, right-handed, you know, there's even more. And those notes are stacked up, and they're slightly off because your fingers may hit them at different times, which is the beauty of MIDI, because it actually keeps your performance in check. Now, if your timing is sloppy, Another thing MIDI can do, it can fix your timing.
Isn't that interesting?
If wow. you speed up on a note within I think 1/64th of the fraction of your measure, you can actually break up like a 64th note.
Right.
So you can fix these things and leave this realism to it, but you could bring like your chord or your melody together within the measure so it stays in time and sounds good with the rest of the music.
It's kind
of
like half AI. It kind of, you're not actually giving it and say, make it sound great, which will probably be what's coming next, you know?
I mean,
it's sad, but in my opinion,
AI is based on taking something and creating it out of someone's idea.
Yeah, you know, whatever's hanging around on the web.
It's a computer
basically.
That decides, this is what it should look like with all the data that is collected and it has in its banks, but whatever. But
now, for me, I know we had talked off camera about having it write a hit song, and I don't know. I'm having trouble with that because, I always think a hit song is something that's, it's just magical. A hook is magical.
Yeah.
And I think a machine...
Not everybody can do it.
No, man.
And not everybody should do it.
Right.
I mean, everybody has a chance to happen to write something that lots of people want to hear, Some people try really hard to do it.
Yeah.
There's guys in Nashville and L.A. just cranking them out, and they all sound the same, in my opinion. But getting back to the recording and drum triggers.
Yeah.
So you've got a drum set... a five-piece drum set, so you got all these different components in the set, and a drummer is physically playing it, and he's hitting every drum that he needs to hit within the song. If he doesn't hit consistently, the drum sound won't sound professional. Okay,
yeah,
in a rock recording situation like that, but that's okay because in the 80s they came up with ways to take the waveform that he hits of, let's say, the snare drum, and replace its sound with a non-microphone sound, which came from his performance, and replace it with a perfect sample of that drum.
And either that's what the trigger does.
And what?
And that's what the trigger does. The trigger reads
that, vibration. That pulse of sound and says, okay, play this sample now. So it's just, and there were so many devices, samplers and stuff like that.
It's kind of like
drum
an
trigger.
EKG, right? I mean, you're putting a thing on the same principle.
Yeah, it reads, and intelligent ones, as they got better, it would pick up on the dynamics and would play that sample quieter or louder, depending on how the drummer did it.
That's wild.
Okay, to me, honestly, that is not representing the drummer. And you can ask 99 out of 100 drummers, they want to hear their drum sound.
Yeah.
They don't want triggers on there. Unless they're selling out to the sound of modern music where everything is that kind of sound. Now, if you're making a dance song and you're programming drum samples, that's a whole other style of music. That I can accept. I've made drum patterns and stuff like that all through my career for that type of music.
Yeah.
And that works for me. But when a real drummer, take a kid. You got a kid's band. They're in high school, okay?
Yeah.
Kid saved $500, bought a used drum set, okay? Mm-hmm. Worked 2 summers to buy those drums. And then he walks home with a drum sound that is fake. How do you think he feels? That wasn't your performance. Yeah, you hit things, but guess what? That's not the organic sound of your band playing. I insist on bands playing as live as possible, other than recording vocals at the same time. But when a band's playing together, that's what they're used to.
Yeah.
That's where their energy comes from.
Which leads me to the next question, tracks. So
For
live performances, what are your thoughts on those?
I don't condone it.
Because my church does that. They use tracks.
Yeah.
And, I don't think they don't do it to directly make money. They do it to just enhance the performance.
Right.
If, a bass player doesn't show up, they drop a bass in
there. Well, then, I mean, it's a corrective measure for that situation.
So what tracks
I'm okay with it. I've never been in a band that used the track
As
a background thing.
And just to tell everybody what tracks are, basically, as a musician, you know, when you're playing live, in some instances through the sound system or whoever you're working with, there'll be additional music tracks that'll be playing.
Let's call it a karaoke track.
Kind of like a karaoke track with like a click. You usually have a click track going, which is like click, to follow it. But, you know, they enhance the music. But sometimes, like I was saying with the church, if a bass player doesn't show up, they just put the bass in. And you see two people up there playing, and there's a whole band playing. It's like,
yeah. And there's a lot of guys that I respect that have been in bands since the 60s, okay, that use tracks in their background. The thing, and it enhances the show, and you know the audience knows it, especially these veteran guys that are been doing it for years and years and years. People are like, sounds good. They're usually in there playing, and people are having conversations. They're background music, anything. But my wife and I have a duo, as well as a full band, and the band doesn't play the tracks yet. We're a four piece, so we try to get the most out of the three of our musicians. In the band, and she's the lead singer, but she plays keys when we need to fill that in. She plays all kinds of percussion, and when we do our duo, if we want to fill a song up that's an acoustic song or a not acoustic song, but we represent it acoustically because it's only the two of us playing the duo, she'll play percussion
or she'll tap on
my guitar.
Yeah, that's cool.
And give this like percussive kind of sound, and we have a blast, and it's
so cool. So. You know, I guess with me with tracks, it's like I think like anything, it can be abused, you know, or it can enhance, you know. There's like, I think there's like backup singers or something, maybe that sometimes helps, you know, and the whole band.
We saw a duo at a restaurant the other day. It's a bar we're going to be playing in Strongsville.
Yeah.
Right on Pearl Road, called Gino's. Gino's a good dude. We met him. We talked to him. Yeah. So we're gonna be playing there in a week or so.
Cool.
And in 1 week, actually. And this group they played to karaoke tracks. It was two women singers. Okay, and they danced around, and they looked cool, and they were they were moms, you know, and there were kids in the audience and, on the patio there, and everybody had a good time, and they sounded good, but how do you put a full band on there if, you know, you can, you could fit a full band at our full band's playing there. What I'm saying is these two women just, they're trading off vocals, you know, singing harmonies together, and it was fun. It was a fun time.
Oh, that's
we
cool.
watched them.
That's cool. So Eddie, tell me why someone should come into this studio to either do recordings or do their podcast here.
Well, there's several reasons why people wouldn't want to do that. Not the number one reason, but one reason is our efficiency. You know, we like to get things done. We like to respect people's time and their energy level, because you don't want to drag things out. You don't want things to be like, oh, they're not prepared, that kind of thing. It's very unprofessional. So we cater to people, so we have a lot of repeat business because of that, because we really take care of our customers. You know, that's one reason. Professionalism, okay, professional look, professional sound, we try to achieve that. And we do achieve that every time.
I can totally attest to that. I've heard some of the stuff that comes out of this. And we're going to play some later because I want people to know what you can do.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. Love to have people hear that. Yeah, that's one of the reasons. And I think having a professional environment, okay? People walk into a studio like ours and they're like, wow, this is a pro studio. This is what a studio looks like on MTV or on YouTube, you know, these professional studios. And you want people to feel that they're in a place where they feel like this was built for them, you know, and the work that comes out of here, you know, it's a testament to how the professional look and feel is to a place. So, you know, all those things, you know, add up and they keep you busy. You know, and people keep coming back, and thank God for that. We stay busy, which is great.
Super, super. Well, that's great. And so if anybody's interested in coming to the studio here, you can always just reach out to BVS Film Productions at bvsfilmproductions.com or info@bvsfilmproductions. Want to thank Eddie for being here. This has been a great episode and a really awesome place that that you've got here. And I think it's going to be great to serve our clients well over time.
Cool. Thanks, so, Dan. Thanks for having me in. All right. Having us talk about what we do. This is what we love. We're passionate about it. So great. God bless everybody.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right. Take care. Thanks.
Have a great day. Thanks. Bye.
Let's face it, everybody loves to make podcasts and vodcasts, but nobody wants to edit them. Well, except for us. At Premier Podcast Productions, we professionally edit and distribute podcasts and vodcasts for companies around the world. Our process is simple and affordable, allowing you to stay focused on what you do best, developing great content and building your subscriber base. From recording and editing to final distribution and marketing, we can help every step of the way to make your podcast stand out and get the results it deserves. Contact us today at PremierPodcastPros.com to take your podcast to the next level.